The following audio is from the weekly message at Summit Church in the upstate of South Carolina. More information is available at summitupstate.org.
If you have your Bibles, you can open them with me to the Gospel of Mark chapter 14. And as you turn there, just a reminder of two things. One, in the backdrop, consider Hebrews 12, 1 and 2. For the joy set before him, he endured the cross and its shame. Just let that linger with us this morning for a moment. And then, secondly, just consider where we've come from Mark as we walk into this chapter and this moment in Jesus' final days of earthly ministry, because it's familiar. And so sometimes when you come to something familiar, it's easy to kind of pace through it quickly or run through it because you know it well and you've heard many things said about it. And so I think this morning, one of the things that would really benefit all of us is to allow ourselves to just slowly walk through the garden with Jesus, to not let familiarity ruin or rob us of something that Jesus wants us to see about who he is. And actually, I think that's Mark's purpose as well, right? Mark has said from the very beginning, I want you to see Jesus Christ, the Son of God. And so I hope for our time together that even though we have seen a lot about Jesus already, we don't miss something here about Jesus just because we know how the story goes, as it were. I mean, we are in fact in these final days of the life of Jesus. We are in his final week heading toward the cross and the resurrection, and we long to get there in one sense. Sometimes we rush there because it's so profoundly powerful and beautiful, but I think the same is true for where we will live this morning as well. And one of the things that is good for us as we think back about the Gospel of Mark up until this point is we have seen Jesus Christ so beautiful and strong and true and consistent, right? I mean, Jesus, one of the things that is so compelling about Jesus is he's so poised. It seems like he's so self-controlled, so spirit-controlled that everything that comes his way, there's something about Jesus that is very attractive and drawing to us even this present day when you read his life, because you find someone who seems completely in control even though everything around him seems like it's not. And I want us to remember that. I think that's important. That's a beautiful picture of who Jesus is. He does, in fact, walk in a way that is spirit-led, spirit-controlled. He demonstrates a kind of poise in life with the Father in the midst of a broken world that he is inviting you and I to experience. So those are good things to see about who Jesus is. But here in the garden, I actually think we discover a Jesus who is still poised, but not afraid to demonstrate to you and I something that I think we know theologically, we know theoretically, we know in a lot of ways we would mentally agree to this fact. But Jesus shows us this, Mark shows us this in a really wonderful way, and that is Jesus is also human. And that's hard for us. I don't know if you're like me. I know theologically that Jesus was fully God and fully human, but when I think about it, I go, but probably a little more God. Because I know me, I'm fully human. And yet, I think Mark invites us into a real beautiful moment to see the humanity of Jesus. And not just that, but not to miss that. So I want to read Mark chapter 14, verses 32 to 52, and I want us to just kind of allow our hearts. Some of you are visual learners. You'll go here really quick. You'll be in this in a matter of seconds, and some of you, that's not how you learn, or it's not how you're wired, and so it might take you a second to let your heart and mind set here. But I'd love for us to enter into the context and the setting of a garden in the evening, at night, and this part might not be hard for several of you, and imagine you're tired, okay? Imagine you're tired, perhaps worn out, and maybe heavy. as you enter it. Mark 14, starting in verse 32. And they went to a place called Gethsemane, and he said to his disciples, "Sit here while I pray." And he took with him Peter and James and John and began to be greatly distressed and troubled. And he said to them, "My soul is very sorrowful, even to death. Remain here and watch." Going a little farther, he fell on the ground and prayed that, if it were possible, the hour might pass from him. And he said, "Abba, Father, all things are possible for you. Remove this cup from me. Yet not what I will, but what you will." And he came and he found them sleeping. And he said to Peter, "Simon, are you asleep? Could you not watch 1 hour? Watch and pray that you may not enter into temptation. The spirit indeed is willing, but the flesh is weak." And he again went away and prayed, saying the same words. And again he came and found them sleeping, for their eyes were very heavy, and they did not know what to answer him. And he came the third time and said to them, "Are you still sleeping and taking your rest? It is enough. The hour has come. The Son of Man is betrayed into the hands of sinners. Rise, let us be going. See, my betrayer is at hand." And immediately, while he was still speaking, Judas came, one of the 12, and with him a crowd with swords and clubs from the chief priests and the scribes and the elders. Now the betrayer had given them a sign saying, "The one I will kiss is the man. Seize him and lead him away under guard." And when he came, he went up to him, Jesus, at once and said, "Rabbi," and he kissed him. And they laid hands on him and seized him. But one of those who stood by drew his sword and struck the servant of the high priest and cut off his ear. And Jesus said to them, to everybody who had come, "Have you come out against as against a robber with swords and clubs to capture me? Day after day, I was with you in the temple teaching, and you did not seize me. But let the scriptures be fulfilled." And they all left him and fled. And a young man followed him with nothing but a linen cloth about his body, and they seized him, but he left the linen cloth and ran away naked. We'll stop there. What a great place to stop. We'll get there in just a moment. Not really the major point of the story, but we will at least see it again. We won't see it again. We will read it again and address it again. I said this earlier, and I mean it. I think we could linger with Jesus in this garden for a very long time and not be dissatisfied in any way. Meaning, I think we could spend weeks here because of what's here. And it would be good for us, and it will be good for us even for just a few moments this morning. But I do not want us to run through here because we know it so well. I think lingering and living here with Jesus is really necessary for us. And I want us to see a few things about Jesus, three in particular, that I think are really, really clear and important for us to see. And as we see them, I just want us to kind of walk through this scene that he is inviting us into, that Mark is telling us about through likely the lens of Peter. And so you get to see all of this through Mark and Peter's eyes, as it were, but you also get invited into this intimate moment because of Jesus. And I don't want us to miss that. And the first couple of verses are really, they set the tone. We talked about it already, but they really set something extremely important before you rush through everything else. And here's what they say. They say, we went to a place called Gethsemane, and he said to his disciples, Jesus did, sit here while I pray. And he took Peter and James and John and began to be greatly distressed and troubled. That's not how we normally think of Jesus. Am I right? Most of us, when we think of Jesus, don't have that image of Jesus in our hearts and minds. Jesus is a conqueror. Jesus is a beautiful, powerful person. He's a strong and gentle person all at the same time. We have wonderful images of Jesus. And don't get me wrong, they rise out of here. They are important. But sometimes, for various reasons, we don't allow ourselves to go to the place where we are reminded Jesus also felt distress and trouble. He goes on to say that he says to his disciples, Peter, James, and John anyway, my soul is very sorrowful, even to death. And that's where I would want for us, before we navigate too quickly, to just live with Jesus in the garden and not miss his humanity. I want you to see his humanity. He wants you to see his humanity. Mark and Peter want you to see his humanity. He knows what it's like to feel distressed and troubled. As a matter of fact, he knows what it's like to feel sorrow to the pain of death. Think about that. Jesus Christ, the Son of God, high and exalted and lifted up, eternally existing before the foundation of the world, says to you about his own life, I was distressed and troubled and I was sorrowful even to the point of death. It's compelling to me that he didn't want to be alone. He brings his disciples with him. He's always saying something important to them. And what he's actually saying with his words, what he's demonstrating with his life, and what he's inviting them to experience alongside of him. But in his desire to not be alone, it's not just that he surrounds himself with his disciples. Where does he go? Where does Jesus go when he is distressed and greatly troubled? Where does he go when he is sorrowful, even to the point of death? He runs to the Father. He goes to the place where he has always gone. I feel like we dismiss this human side of Jesus so frequently. I know in my own life, I know in my mind that Jesus felt and experienced life in a sinful and broken world to the fullest extent. I know that the scriptures teach he felt and endured temptation. I know that the scriptures say to me that he was troubled and distressed and felt sorrow and pain. I know that. But I live like Jesus is a supernatural superhero who just rose above everything difficult and then is going to get me there eventually. But in the meantime, I'm supposed to just look to him and go, well, you're there, you're with me, you're my example, but you don't really know what it's like. And Jesus is saying to you and to me, I do know what it's like. Perhaps more than you will ever know. See his humanity. The second thing that I think Mark allows us to be invited into and Jesus allows us to see is in verses 35 through 42, what happens? Jesus starts praying. He tells them to watch. That seems consistent with some things he's been saying to them. Be alert, stay awake. Watch, be on guard, don't be led astray. And here he sits with them and says, hey, I want you to sit here with me. I want you to stay alert, stay awake. I'm going to go over here and pray. And there's something really wonderful that I think you see in those verses. It says, going a little farther, he fell on the ground and he prayed, if it were possible, the hour might pass from him. And look at what he says in verse 36. He said, Abba, Father, all things are possible for you. You can do this if you want. Remove this cup from me. This cup, which signified the suffering that was to come, the endurance of the suffering that was going to be ahead, that he was fully aware of. The cup of the rightful judgment of God against sin was going to be endured and suffered through, right? So he knows that, and he says, you can remove this cup from me because everything's possible with you. And then he says, yet not what I will, but what you will. And I know we know that. I do. I know most of you go, oh, not my will, but yours be done. That is a wonderful, beautiful thing, and we will revisit that in a moment. But do not miss that Jesus was willing to wrestle with the Father in prayer. He was willing to go to the Father intimately and wrestle through sorrow and distress and trouble in light of what was going on and what was to come. He trusted that the Father actually would invite it. That the Father is strong enough, loving enough, secure enough, powerful enough, good enough that you can bring that wrestle right into him. And Jesus demonstrates that, this wrestle. So not only do you see his humanity, but you see the willingness to wrestle. And he prays, let it pass, Lord. Let it pass, Father. But not my will, yours. He leans into the Father. And as he's leaning into the Father, they, what? Fall asleep. Now, I don't know if you judge them harshly or you go, I get it. Either way, I get it. They're exhausted. They're tired. It's dark. And Jesus has invited them into this intimate moment, but when he comes to find them, he finds them sleeping. So he charges Peter, hey, Peter, wake up and lest you fall into temptation. Now, you and I both know where we just left last week. He has said to his disciples, you're all going to run away. You're all going to desert me. And Peter, FYI, even though I know in your heart you do not want to and do not believe you will deny me three times. So there's this kind of exhortation to Peter. Peter, stay alert, lest you fall into temptation because the spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak. He goes away and prays. Don't miss what he does when he goes away and prays the second time. It says here, he prays the same words. That's why I know he's willing to wrestle with the Father, right? He's willing to go back and plead again with the Father like an intimate child who has been invited to the Father's presence to say, hey, let's talk this through. Let's wrestle this out. Is this what you want? I know you can do all things, so you can let it pass, but I want what you want. Goes back and finds them sleeping again. They slept, he prayed. And I think that's why you get a movement toward the last thing to see as we navigate through this part of the garden. And it comes in verse 41 in the second half to verse 42. It says, it is enough. The hour has come. The Son of Man is betrayed into the hands of sinners. Rise, let us be going. See, my betrayer is at hand. And then it continues, right? Who shows up at the garden? Judas, with a bunch of people with swords and clubs. And Judas said to them, the one you need to arrest is the one that I go up to and kiss. And he walks into the garden. Now think about this. Just don't run by. See his humanity. See his wrestle with the Lord. And then move to his resolve. Here comes Judas walking into the garden with the mob. Walks up to Jesus and calls him Rabbi and kisses him. And they grab Jesus, and as they do, Peter, Like, you can say what you want about Peter, but he had some fight, and he had some will, and he had some desire that was strong for Jesus. Now, there are some other things at play there we'll see in just a moment, but there's a beautiful thing going on, too. And he pulls out his sword and says, you know, hey, if you're taking him, you're going down with we're going down with a fight. And it doesn't tell us it's Peter, which I love. You know, Peter keeps leaving people unnamed. And so, because I think Peter's not trying to get you to see him. So he pulls out his sword, he cuts the guy's ear off, and Jesus, in this particular version of the story, doesn't respond to that. He responds to the group that's trying to arrest him. And I think it's interesting. He says, have you come out against me as a robber? Like, you have to use brute force with your swords and your clubs. And then look at verse 49. Day after day I was with you in the temple teaching. You did not seize me. And I want you to not just see his humanity, not just see his wrestle, but I do want you to see his resolve. And in verse 49 at the very end, you see it so clearly, but let the scriptures be fulfilled. That's where Jesus lands. And so, right after he's done praying, he says to his disciples, rise, get up, let's go, time is at hand. And right when the mob's trying to capture him and Peter's starting to lose his cool, Jesus says, hey, you come out here to take me like a robber? You had all the time you needed to seize me if you wanted to in front of everybody. I see what you're up to. I know what you're doing. But also, let the scriptures be fulfilled. That's a powerful thing to say. And then it says what he said would happen. Verse 50, they all left him and fled. In verse 51, a young man followed him with nothing but a linen cloth around his body, and they seized him, but he left the linen cloth and ran away naked. FYI, that most people think that's likely Mark who wrote this gospel. Now, can't you see that conversation happening with Peter? Hey, Peter, you've been leaving a lot of people unnamed. Ain't no way you're putting my name in here. There's a lot of things that we're going to tell people who was responsible, but we really want them to see Jesus, so don't be throwing me in there. And what you have in this moment, and there's more to come next week, but what you have is a pretty powerful and intimate moment with Jesus, where you see his humanity and you see his wrestle with the Father and his will, and you see his resolve, rise, get up, it's time. Let the scriptures be fulfilled. Peter stands by, cuts off a guard's ear. I think it's worth noting that perhaps that is fulfilling a piece of the exhortation Jesus gives him while they're praying. Hey, Peter, stay alert, stay awake, lest you fall in temptation. The spirit's willing to go with me. Flesh is weak. You're still going to want to get after this your way. You're still going to want to accomplish the things you want to see come to fruition. You're going to want to see that your way. And so the guards show up. What's Peter do? His way. Psh, let's go. The disciples take off. Jesus said they would. Running away is often tempting when life gets stressful and difficult and sorrowful and painful and you're confused and you don't know what's going on and you had a completely different expectation in mind. Lest we judge them too harshly. Jesus, however, is doing something really important in their midst. And here's what I want us to note about Peter, because this is part of his recalling of the story of Jesus and his desire to get you and I to lift our gaze and see Jesus, is Peter does, in fact, kind of stay close by. Everybody takes off and runs, but Peter lingers close enough to actually get asked some questions that you're going to find out next week, what those questions were and how he responded. But it's all tethered together in the fact that Jesus invited them to something important. Why? Because every moment was an opportunity for them to see him, to stay awake, to perceive his ways, and to understand his way, his kingdom was always aligned with the will of the Father. Always. even when he had to wrestle for it, even when he was in great distress and trouble over it, even when there was sorrow attached to it, he ran to the Father, labored with the Father, and then his resolve was, rise, get up, let's go, the hour's at hand, let the scriptures be fulfilled. That's necessary for us to see that even in his sorrow, he goes to the Father and he holds the disciples close and desires to draw them into more. Even in his wrestle with the will and plans made before the foundation of the world, he submits himself to the way of heaven and the will of the Father and the scorn and shame of what lies ahead because he knows what it will bring. And even in the face of death, his resolve is obedience to the scriptures. Now, I think it's important to take just a moment and acknowledge something. One is this. If you want to see Jesus' theology on suffering, this is a really beautiful place for you to go. I know I would be tempted, and you would be tempted likely, to go to the cross, and there's a lot to learn at the cross, but here's something you learn before the cross about Jesus' theology of suffering. Do you know what it is? It's a really powerful theology of suffering. It's a theology you and I, an understanding of suffering you and I ought to continue to ask the Lord to form and shape in our own hearts and lives before we endure and as we endure suffering in this life. And his is summed up beautifully. What is Jesus Christ's theology on suffering? Here it is. Let the scriptures be fulfilled. Don't miss that. Don't run by that because we know the prayer, your will, not mine. Don't run by that because we know the scene of the garden and we have images about what it might have looked like. And some of you may have actually walked in areas where it might have been. Don't miss the wrestle just because we believe that Jesus was also fully God. Therefore, he knew things we didn't fully know or understand. We attribute things to Jesus he never says about himself. He seems to just lean right into the embrace of the Father, wrestle through his will, through all the sorrow and distress and trouble, and his resolve at the end is his theology of suffering. Here's what I know is to come, and here's where I stand. Let the scriptures be fulfilled. The reason I think that's so astounding, if you let yourself soak in it for a little bit, is though, even though he endured through sorrow and wrestled with will and resolved to obey, do you remember what the author of Hebrews told us? It was for the joy set before him that he endured the cross and its shame. What? Something in the midst of the distress and the trouble and the sorrow and his sleeping best friends and the betrayal of one who was so close. Something there was sustaining joy. That's amazing. We need that. You and I need that, do we not? Do you not need this reminder that you can wrestle through it, you can labor through it, you can be distressed through it, you can feel sorrow through it, you can agonize through it, and you can stand in the resolve that what God wills is good. And while doing so, you can actually experience joy. That is an unbelievable thing that only the kingdom of God offers you. Only the person of Jesus Christ extends to you because the willing, suffering servant seen all through the Gospel of Mark is also resolved to become the true and better Savior. Jesus Christ, the Son of God. the fulfillment of promise, the second Adam, obedient in the garden. Everything God had said would come is coming, and Mark has always intended for you and I to see and for his readers to see and understand and experience what? Jesus Christ, the Son of God. That's what he wanted. And that's what you and I get invited into here. What are the joys that were before Christ that would compel him to endure the coming suffering and the cross and its shame? I can think of at least these four or five, and I'm just going to list them for you. I think the joy of glorifying his Father was way up here. He tells us that. I think the joy of obedience, we've talked about this before. I think we see it really beautifully in John 15 when Jesus talks about what it means to abide in him and abide in his love. And he says, if you abide in my love, you obey my commands, and my joy will be in you, and your joy will be complete, overflowing, amazing. So there's a sense in which I think Jesus is demonstrating not just the joy in glorifying the Father, but a joy that in obedience there is joy to be found. I think it's the joy of the fulfillment of promise. Just lest we forget, these are plans Jesus himself was a part of making before the foundation of the world. So when Jesus comes and wrestles with the Father, you could imagine the wrestle is this what we said would be good? Is this cup what we said needed to be endured? Is this where we are continuing to go? Because Father, if it is, I'm going. I'm with you. I think perhaps you could say the joy of salvation, what a salvation he is about to accomplish fully and completely. And then lastly, and I don't want you to dismiss it as though just because I put it at the end, it's unimportant. I think one of the joys set before him to endure the cross and its shame was those of you who know him by faith. Because according to the text of Scripture, he delights in you, he sings over you, and he intercedes for you. He hasn't stopped praying for you. Think about that. Which maybe just leads to a second question this morning to consider. And as I ask it, I'll ask Brett and the others to come back up for just a moment to give us an opportunity to think about what we see in the life of Jesus here, but maybe perhaps this question for you. Does the will of the Father and the way of Jesus have your whole heart, your life? Does it dominate your desires? Do you see Jesus Christ? Do you perceive Jesus Christ? Do you know Jesus Christ? Does he have your heart? Are you enjoying him? Are you following in his way? Are you wrestling in life with him so that you can trust his good will and show and demonstrate through his strength, through his enduring grace and mercy, a resolve to be obedient to the things that he wants because you know they lead to joy? I'd love for you to consider that question for just a few moments. And then I just want to come back up before we leave and remind you that regardless of your answer to that question or those questions that I just posed, there's some really, really good news that comes out of the garden.
Thank you for joining for this week's message. Summit Upstate's mission is to give every man, woman, and child the repeated opportunities to see, hear, and respond to the gospel. We'd love to connect with you, so we invite you to reach out to us at summitupstate.org.